Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Geek Wave. This is the low budget show. It's the show so low it has no budget. And hold on to something, folks, because we're headed very far back in time. In some cases, 50 years ago, as we are going to talk about some of the sitcoms of the 1970s. We've done a couple of these episodes before. We started in the 2010s, and then we did the 2000s, and then we did the 1990s, and I talked about the best sitcoms of those eras. And then when we got to the 80s, I was like, this is a little before my time, so let's just look at a list somebody else made, and then we'll talk about the ones that might actually be good or not. Because I couldn't tell you. And now we're going even further back, where the list I have in front of me from IMDb is truly crazy and full of stuff I'm aware of. I am aware of most of this. But if I were to sit here and tell you if any of this was good, I couldn't honestly say. Maybe it was, you know? Man, I can't wait till we get to the 60s. That's going to be crazy. In a year from now, let's do the 60s and talk about it. Because I'm sure they had good television back then, too. They had some stuff. I'm sure they had some decent things. Something at the very least. Who knows what it is. But we have a lot of news to talk about. Some big stuff, actually, that is kind of like, oh, this is going to change the way people view franchise filmmaking. And we have to talk about the passing of a legendary producer in Hollywood. So the first piece of news we have to talk about is this new movie coming from Warner Brothers, because I guess they have some special deal with like the Tolkien estate to make different Lord of the Rings stuff. I don't know what happened there. I know like the rights kind of went to Amazon for some of the stuff, and then Warner Brothers got to keep some of the stuff. But the newest Warner Brothers produced Lord of the Rings thing is coming out in 2026, so they say. Lord of the Rings, The Hunt for Gollum. This is going to be directed and starring Andy Serkis, reprising his role, I guess, as Gollum. And it's going to take place sometime before the events of what happens to the character or whatever. I don't know. I didn't do enough into it to be like, okay, is this going to be interesting for anybody? I think it will, right? Like, is this something to anybody? It's got to be something to somebody, because Serkis wouldn't just, like, sign on to do it for no reason. But then again, he made a Jungle Book movie, and he made a Venom movie, and he didn't even make, like, the first version of either of those movies. So, I guess that's cool. Peter Jackson is producing, whatever the capacity of that is. Who's to say? I just find this very interesting. Like, is this character enough of a draw to get people to come back to a movie? I don't think so. But then again, The Rings of Power did have a really good opening on Amazon, and we're supposedly getting a first look at season 2 very shortly. I don't know. I mean, I know this franchise and this like product of the Lord of the Rings world and the Tolkien stuff is bigger than my knowledge of it or my understanding of it. So, maybe people want to see this, but really, a Gollum movie? Is that really anything? Is that anything anybody would be excited to see? I don't know about that. Me personally, no part of me wants to see that. Because what is that? He's like a side character who like did a thing and he had the magic ring. There's nothing to that except boring stuff. But whatever, Andy Serkis seems to love this character, so he's probably going to get a hefty paycheck for doing this. Which I guess is how you should do it if you're going to be coming back to a franchise. Get the producing credit, get the directing credit, and get the acting credit. So you get a bigger paycheck. That's awesome. We also have a little bit of casting news for the new Fantastic Four film, which is kind of shocking that we got so much of it, but not a lot of it was revealed. Paul Walter Hauser was kind of like teased to be getting a role. The speculation was Mole Man. Seems a little too obvious, in my opinion, for him to be Mole Man. I could really see him just playing like a Yancey Street bro, like just some guy from their past, like one of like the other scientists working there. But again, maybe he is Mole Man. Like, he's a good actor. Emmy wins from last year. Was it last year? I think, yeah, he won last year for Blackbird? Was it Blackbird? where he played the serial killer or something. So there you go. That's pretty cool. I think that's going to be a fun one. He's a good guy. John Malkovich is also supposedly going to show up in this movie. What role is he going to play? It could be anything. My two cents is thinking it's going to be like a weird multi-dimensional being. Maybe Space Ghost. No, the Red Ghost. That's who I mean. Not Space Ghost. Not that cool character from Hanna-Barbera lore. No, the Red Ghost who's got like his weird Russian monkeys and stuff. That's who I think he's going to play. The easy one would be Puppet Master. But I think he'd have more fun being like a weird little freak with some monkeys. So that's what I'm thinking. Two really good actors, both of them do different stuff. But also, the most important casting to come out of this like little array of casting is Ralph Ineson being cast as Galactus. And that's perfect. If you know this guy, he has a very distinctive look to him. He looks like he's tough and intense and kind of grovelly. As soon as you hear him talk, you're like, oh yeah, that's how you got this job. Your voice sounds like you'd eat a planet. And that's awesome. I think he's perfect. I have no complaints of him whatsoever. I know for a while, they were like hinting it was going to be like Antonio Banderas or Javier Bardem. But Ineson is a great choice. Like, this is like a sleeper choice no one's really going to think about. But it also gives this guy like the gravitas and weight to really deliver on this performance. It also makes me think we're going to have like a physical body for Galactus as opposed to a big puffy cloud, which is kind of all we've wanted for the character. Is that, I guess. I like it. You know, I think the initial casting for this movie was pretty good. No, I wasn't upset with any of it. There's choices I wouldn't have made. But then you're like, okay, Julia Garner's going to show up, and now John Malkovich and Paul Walter Hauser and Ralph Ineson. Those are all good choices for a cast I like. I just hope you make a good movie with these people, because I've seen almost all these people and stuff I don't like. So I hope we can make it work. I think we will. I have hopes for this movie. They're not super high, but I don't know. I think we'll get there. I think we'll get there, and I think it'll be pretty good. Now, here's something that's kind of interesting as well, okay? Frank Grillo will be reprising his role as Rick Flagg Sr. in the second season of Peacemaker, which is like, of course, you know? I mean, you kind of want to keep the continuity with Peacemaker because that show is successful. So if you just have the character you're introducing in the Creature Commando show up there, you can still have the legacy of Joel Kinnaman kind of existing. It's interesting. I still think you should just clean slate it and not bring anybody over. I know we all like Viola Davis as Waller, but I think if we just clean slate it, get somebody different, we could try something new and like actually not have to worry about like, well, this actor carries over from this thing to do that. But that's also just comic books, and I'm willing to go on that journey. The general audience seems to be willing to go on that journey, so I think we'll all be okay. You know, nobody complained when Patrick Stewart showed up as Professor X in the Doctor Strange movie, so I'm sure no one's going to freak out at any of this casting. But Grillo, he has the intensity for the Peacemaker world, so put him in there. I have nothing against that. That first season was pretty good. The stuff I didn't like was like the stuff they just didn't know what to do with yet, so if we get like a cleaner second season, I'm sure that's going to be a pretty strong outing. Now, speaking of outing, I'm sorry, that was a bad way to segue. We have to talk about this. It is very important, especially to like a specific legacy of Hollywood and a legacy that we talk about a lot on this channel, which is just like low budget thrillers or just genre films. Legendary producer Roger Corman has passed away at 98. That is a long ass time to be alive. Good for you for making it that long. And I mean, you just look at like the careers that this guy started, like Coppola and Scorsese and Jonathan Demme and Ron Howard and like all these big names that got their debuts and their starts because Corman's like, we could put a young director on this, give them the budget that's very limited and they can just make something and figure it out as they go. Joe Dante, another one, Carpenter owes a lot to the Corman aesthetic. Like it all works well. He's just like a guy that's like, I can do this for the cheap and get a movie out there. Maybe it's not going to be great, but I made it. And it's there and it's out and you can watch it and it's available for you. And I made like a billion things in my time, all of them available for you to check out. Now, on this channel specifically, we looked at one of his earliest films, which is called The Wasp Woman. If you want to check out that video, it will be linked here. And it might be more relevant to the comic book stuff, is like he did produce that ill-fabled, you know, Fantastic Four movie that's supposed to come out in like 94, but never actually saw the light of day. There's an interesting documentary about that. And you just see like this guy's like, well, we could just make this so easily. Real practical effects for the thing. That movie is available in some entirety on any kind of platform. I'm sure you can find it on like YouTube or whatever. It's not bad. I'm not going to say it's great because it's not, but I'll say it's not the worst Fantastic Four movie. And just looking, if you just look up Roger Corman, you're going to see a legacy of film that is incredible and immaculate and silly. Because he's just like, oh, you want $1 million? That's kind of pricey. But I guess we could give you $700,000 to make this stupid little thing. And then you get it and you make it and it's not that good. But hey, we have Jack Nicholson because of it. So you can't complain too much about the stuff he's done. So I'm very sad he's gone. But also, like, you've lived a long life. And we don't really have space for you in the modern way we make movies. Because there's no way we can make a movie that's that cheap anymore. It's crazy. Now, our final piece of news is still kind of a rumor, one we have talked about before, but I'm bringing it up again because I have more thoughts about it. We have talked numerous times about the Sydney Sweeney-led Barbarella project that she's producing. Well, Sony is circling a director, and they're still circling Edgar Wright, but now it's kind of confirmed by Deadline that he's in talks to do it, and I'm still not happy with that choice. There is nothing about the Edgar Wright filmography that screams a sexful guy who loves having a fun, raunchy, spicy time, or feminist icon. Nothing about his work has that feeling. He's a sexless filmmaker who is tongue-in-cheek in all the wrong ways that Barbarella is. He is so, so wrong for the choice. I get, like, the style-wise, like, he uses some good colors, and he can get some good looks out of his actors. But just for, like, the vibe and the substance, he is not going to frame this in a way that's flirty or fun or creatively interesting in the way that Barbarella needs to be. You don't hire a sexless filmmaker. You got to get a horny, weird guy in there. Or, you know what? A woman? You should get, like, a female director. Edgar Wright, I know he's doing, like, The Running Man at Paramount, but I don't want to see him do this. How weird is it? And this is kind of unrelated. How weird is Edgar Wright's career making, like, the Cornetto trilogy, this low-budget stuff? You get more money when you kind of, like, do the bigger Hollywood thing. You get to make, like, Baby Driver and Last Night in Soho and Scott Pilgrim, which is, like, you doing, like, the fun thing that nobody really responds to critically. And now when you were tapped to do Ant-Man for like a long time, you get out of like the genre of doing the thing that's already an existing property, and now your next two movies after your original one bombs are Running Man and Barbarella. I don't like that trajectory. It doesn't feel right to me, and I still don't want him to be this director. You know, I could, I don't know, I'm trying to think of, like, some female directors I would like over him doing this. And I still think, you know, Nia DaCosta is a top choice for me. Chloe Zhao would even be one I would pick over him. Greta Gerwig's a little too obvious, so I wouldn't want that. You know who should do it? And I will stand by this. I think this is a great idea. They'd never do it, though. But the Wachowski sisters would be so good for a Barbarella movie. They'd be incredible. I would really like that vibe. Are you kidding me? Oh my goodness. That would be amazing. I love that idea now. Ugh, why did I think of that? Because, like, the energy that they put into Speed Racer making that insane movie is exactly the type of, like, distilled love of a specific thing you need for Barbarella. And none of Edgar Wright's movies have that vibe. I'm going to stop talking about it because it's going to make me more and more mad. I don't like him being the guy to do it. I don't think he should do it. I don't want him to do it. Nia DaCosta is like my reasonable choice. I wish it was her. You know? Okay. Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about stuff from the 70s. Before any of us listening were born. So yeah, we've done these before a couple of times, just talking about sitcoms, because they are one of the biggest and most important staples of television, if not the most important thing about television. Late night talk shows, the news, Saturday morning cartoons and sitcoms, are those like the big four of television? And then your prestigious miniseries, I guess. I guess those are the big ones. Or cop drama. What a stupid thing I brought up. The news is probably the most important one. And sports are on television, too. Why did I bring this up? Everything about television matters. We don't have it anymore in the modern streaming era. So let's look about stuff where the characters... They didn't even know there was a cell phone. None of these characters knew what a cell phone was. I'm sure the actors in them, they don't even know what it is now. So I found this list of 25 sitcoms from the 70s. And I'll be honest with all of you folks. There are some things on here. I don't know what they are. But I do know the majority, if even by name. And their names are stuff we haven't really talked about on this channel before. Which is something, isn't it? Some of the, like, oh my goodness. Should we go in order? Should we go? Let's do 20. No, we're not going to do the 25 through 1. We'll start at 1 because you're going to listen to the more interesting ones that are the ones people know. Why would I start with the bottom of the list? Let's start at the top because these are things people know and things I have recommended to people before. A couple of them. Not this first one that's on the list here. All in the Family. A working class man constantly squabbles with his family over the important issues of the day. So this is, what if a guy was like mad at his family or something? You know, this is Archie Bunker. I'm sure some of you recognize the name. That's Carol O'Connor's character, Archie Bunker, a famous curmudgeon-y old man who was just like, what are we doing today? Back in my day, things were different, but I can't say that anymore, or whatever. And they were doing that in the 70s, you know? Like, that's just a staple. He's just a regular guy, and he does stuff, and he exists, and he does stuff. And then a bunch of supporting characters show up. This is where Rob Reiner comes from. Well, that's not where he comes from, but this is where you'd know him, you know? He plays a meathead, so there you go. Rob Reiner's in this show. I couldn't tell you a thing about this, but I'm sure just by cultural osmosis, you are aware of the Archie Bunker character, and that kind of is cool. And I know old people that like that one because it's relatable. If there's one thing that old men relate to in a sitcom, it's an old man complaining about stuff. We do it now. Like, that's what we do now. I wonder how old this guy was when he started the show. Okay, so it started in 71. And he was born in 1924. So, and he's in his 40s. Okay. That's reasonable. That's reasonable. He looks like he's 100. But that happens. That's just par for the course. The second one on this list is, I think, something a lot more people know. It's MASH. And MASH, we could do an entire video talking about MASH. One of the most important television shows out there that really informed a lot of comedy going forward. That gave you a lot of like character actors that people would love going forward. It's great, you know? Alan Alda still rocks. He's still a cool guy and one of the most consistent people on the show. It's just like one of those revolving door casts where like every new season, every other episode, you can figure out like who's in it and you'll just like respond to them. Respond to whatever era you like. I like this show a lot. I think for the most part, okay, the comedy holds up pretty well. I'm not going to say it's perfect because it's not. It's from 50 years ago. But the timeless thing about like these people, they work in like, you know, they're like the hospital in the Korean War. And they're just going to like do stuff. What do they get up to? Antics, probably. It's kind of fun. and they weren't afraid to take like serious moments. A lot of the TV shows you watch today gets a lot of their shit from MASH, and it's really important. Same with this one. Another show I really like is the Mary Tyler Moore Show. She's just fun. And we're going to kind of like talk about this on the list a bit too. Just this idea of like a young woman. She's single and she's doing her own thing and she's making it on her own. They're going to make it after all, that kind of vibe. But Mary Tyler Moore's hilarious. She's adorable. And this show is just really fun. And you know, Ed Asner is in it. And we love Ed Asner. He was a peach. Cloris Leachman showed up every now and then. You love that. Like this is where we start doing like the cool thing. You get a lot of stuff today because of what the Mary Tyler Moore Show did. And she's just a really compelling lead and a fun lady to hang out with. And you love it. I really like that show. You could probably tell the shows I respond to more are the ones that don't have a curmudgeon-y old man who's just like, well, I don't know about this. I didn't fight in World War II to come home and have my neighbor, like, hang a wreath on his door because he's something, I don't know. Like, yeah, no. With, like, a single woman making it on her own? I love that. Should we spend a lot of time in the Happy Days world? Happy Days is on this list, too. I feel this is another one that gets a lot of the stuff you like in the modern day from it because you have a lot of actors still working that are in this and people that are pretty cool. Happy Days, it's just like a bunch of kids and their parents doing stuff in a time. And it's one of those shows that ran for so long, it did everything. It invented tropes, it invented multiple spinoffs, and multiple spinoffs are on this list. So I guess we could just like talk about some of the spinoffs. Would that be okay? Mork and Mindy's on the list. Isn't it weird? Because they wanted to like compete with Star Wars, they introduced Robin Williams as like an alien, and they're like, we could just spin this off. That's not weird to anybody. That's like a normal thing we could do. And I'm like, okay. There was like 100 spinoffs from this show. And I'm sure if I look at this list, there's going to be some I don't remember that are on this list, but I don't know. I know Mork and Mindy is one of them, which is just like, I can't do it. I can't do that show. It is so freaking intense and annoying. I don't respond to it. It's just too much going on. I'm not a fan. Not for me. Not my cup of tea. But what is my cup of tea is another spinoff that happened pretty early in the Happy Days run. Laverne and Shirley. This is more my speed. It's like the Mary Tyler Moore Show. You know, it's Penny Marshall, Cindy Williams. These two cool girls who just have fun and they do their thing. And you're like, yes, they do. We love to see it. They live on their own. They're going to rock and roll and have fun together. And they do. They get up to crazy antics. And it's more fun to me than any of the stuff at Happy Days or the stuff in Mork and Mindy. There's other spin-offs from the Happy Days world. We don't have to get into it. And I don't want to get into it, I should say, because there's too many. But of all of those, the Laverne and Shirley is a fun one. Bunch of cool girls doing cool stuff. I love to see it. The Brady Bunch, I guess we should talk about too. Like, these are iconic, but if you're under the age of 20, you're not going to watch these. Why would you? You have to watch, like, you know, The Sopranos or something, which is probably better for you. Because the thing of all these shows too is the formula is just the same thing. It's just there's an opening number, then we do the theme song, and then they do a thing, and then there's either like a guest star or something, and silly antics, and they kind of wrap it up in the end, leaving it on like a joke ending. They all do that. They all do that, and that's okay. There's nothing against it. But you know what? The Brady Bunch, what if there was a bunch of kids in a family? What would that mean? What would that mean? Who knows? The misadventures of a large family united when a widower and a widow marry. Cool. It's popular. I know it's important because it talks about that stuff. And a lot of these shows, too, are just like, now remember, kids, you have to learn the valuable lesson about doing a thing properly and what have you and all that stuff. And okay, kids, you get it. Sanford and Son. The misadventures of a cantankerous junk dealer and his frustrated son. What are you talking about? That sounds crazy, but this is Red Fox, isn't it? Oh, I remember Red Fox. Nobody listening to this remembers that. If you, everything we're talking about, I've referenced Mary Tyler Moore, Alden Alda, Mork and Minty, Laverne and Shirley. If you're under 20, none of this means anything to you. If you're under 30, I'm sure some of this means anything to you. But when I say Red Fox is funny, what does that mean to you? I don't think it means anything to anybody. That's kind of fun. This list also is kind of just like the era where we started to have more like black-forming content, where more like black actors got bigger roles and they were like leading television. It became like its own thing, which you love to see because it's important. So Sanford and Son, that's cool. But then you have Three's Company, which is just, what if you were weird? What if you were weird? John Ritter, what if you were weird? It's crazy how long some of these run for. Like, all of these shows get, like, over 150 episodes. And you're like, can you imagine a modern TV show getting 150 episodes? We don't do that anymore. That's insane. But what if, like, single people live together in a building? And what if their neighbor was, like, a guy? Or what if they, no, they were living with him because it's Three's Company. I'm sorry, I'm misreading the IMDb quote. What if, like, three people lived in a building? Could you imagine such a world? And guess what, folks? They got 174 episodes out of that concept. People living in a building together. They did that. What about the B. Arthur show Maude? I don't know what that is. I mean, I know her from other stuff. But man, she looks like she's the same age. It's an All in the Family spinoff centered around Edith's cousin, Maude Finley, a liberal, independent woman living in Tuckahoe, New York. Okay. This sounds just like a normal thing. The spinoff got 141 episodes, folks. Can you believe, like, we just, the real cinematic universe is just like the history of television because everybody's coming out of everything. Like, The Facts of Life and Different Strokes, man. Like, it's, everything's coming out of everybody. And then we have Good Times. I don't know what this one is either. A poor family make the best of things in the Chicago housing projects. Oh my goodness, is this the one that Netflix just, like, redid in, like, the crazy, really stylized animation that looks utterly insane and nobody was happy with the choices of it because they, like, turned really stupid things into caricatures? I think that's what they did. I'm gonna try looking it up because I know Netflix just like redid one of those classic one. I think it's Good Times. Yeah, okay. Oh my goodness, that's crazy. That's 50 years old and they made it look worse now. That's I'm ashamed to say that exists. I'm glad that show exists. It's kind of interesting that all of, like, these shows that feature, like, the black leads with the black characters are about, like, a guy working in a junkyard with his son, or, like, we're in, like, the housing projects. But I guess the Jeffersons is the next on this list, which is about, like, a rich guy and people seeing him differently in different ways. So there you go. A rich African-American family who move into a luxury apartment building, develop close, if occasionally, fractious relationships with other tenants. What if, now imagine, folks, imagine this. What if your neighbor was black and you were a white guy and it was the 70s? How would you feel? Upset. Well, that got 253 episodes, which I'm not complaining about. This is an iconic show that is worth it. It's awesome. I have not seen every episode of The Jeffersons. But it's a good show, it's really funny, and a lot of the shows I like reference it, so I can't be too mad about it for that. Same with this one, Welcome Back, Cotter. I have seen enough of this show to tell you it's pretty fun. Have I seen it because it has John Travolta and I was like doing that thing? Kind of. But it's just interesting. You know, a teacher like returns to his inner city high school of his youth to teach a new generation of troublemaking kids. We love this type of story. It's something we go back to all the time when we do our sitcoms and stuff. Boy Meets World is an example of this. You just have a cantankerous teacher or whatever, like a different type of teacher who's different minded than the kids, and the kids are learning about like the old generation through the new generation and blah blah blah, and everyone's doing something and they're learning stuff, and it's like, hey, what's going on here, and that kind of vibe. And guess what, this one got 95 episodes, so it's not even worth it. Are you kidding me? They didn't do anything. There's nothing about this one that works. Crazy. But no, it's fun. We do this concept a lot. I do enjoy it. It's an interesting show. If you just watch some of it, it's pretty fun. Same with this show. I think is awesome. The Bob Newhart show. I love Bob Newhart. He's one of those just comedic geniuses who just has a very tired, curmudgeon-y vibe that I just respond to. This is my type of old guy. Just the most annoying guy ever. Who's just sick of it all and ready to just get rid of it. This also starred Marcia Wallace, who I know from The Simpsons, of course. And I love the energy of this thing. It works so well. Because he's like a smart, tired old guy. He's just like, I love it. It's great. Like, these are all good, but God forbid if you actually watch them. And it's kind of crazy because we're looking at something that inspired a lot of comedians, but of like a very specific generation. And maybe this is why like there's such like a divide now in the way we do like sitcom projects and like the classic stuff. Like the shows that are referencing like the 70s stuff that we're talking about today, they were being made in like the late 80s and the early 90s. And now like the modern stuff was referencing things from like the 90s and the 2000s. So it's just like a really interesting divide for that happening. I find it very interesting. To say the least. The Partridge Family. I'm not even going to bother talking about that. What if people were songs and stuff? What if people were songs? What if they were musicians? Here's a good one. Taxi. Taxi is a good one. I have seen Taxi. I know Taxi. This is just, it's just right there in like that classic world of just like, you know, we're building up to stuff. It's got the same vibe of like a Cheers and that whole energy. We're just in a place and people are weird in it. And it's got a lot of actors that you'd be familiar with today, like Andy Kaufman, Tony Danza, Christopher Lloyd, Carol Kane, Danny DeVito, Judd Hirsch, you know, all these names that I am sure you are familiar with in some capacity. You have to be. You'd have to be. I don't know why you wouldn't be. It's great. Interesting show. It, look, everything we're talking about, it's not going to hold up perfectly. This one, I don't know. I watched it a few years back. I wasn't grossly upset by it, but I'm also like, I'm very much aware of what we're doing here, and I'm not the biggest fan of what we're doing here, so I don't have much to say about that. Barney Miller, don't know what the hell that is. The captain of the NYPD 12 precinct and his staff handle the various local troubles and characters that come into the squad room. That sounds really boring to me. Police stuff, I don't care. Sounds very boring. But you know what? This got 171 episodes. So forget I said anything. It went forever. WKRP in Cincinnati. Now we're talking. Now we are cooking with gas, folks. Another classic one. That is probably worth exploring. It's also like one of those things that we wouldn't really like do anymore. Could you imagine them making a TV show today about like working at a radio station? Frasier doesn't even work at a radio station anymore. He did like a weird talk show in like the reboot of Frasier. They could even like have it be like he's been doing the disc jockey thing for like 30 years. They just like, he got a talk show. He did like a Dr. Phil thing. There's no way we could do this today because it's so specific because kids don't listen to the radio. I don't know any kids who listen to the radio. It's crazy. We talked about that one. What's happening? What is happening, folks? I don't know. What was happening? A trio of black youths learn about life, love, friendship, credit cards, gambling, and a variety of other things while growing up in an inner city. Okay. I'm sure they did. Did they learn good? They must have. That's cool. Seems like a good show. You know, ran for 65. That's not many. 65 episodes, that's not a lot of anything. One Day at a Time, is that something? 209 episodes of this? Oh my goodness. What are we doing? This had Valerie Bertinelli in it? How old was she? She was so young. Oh, yeah, she would be young. I'm looking at the poster. Okay. The Misadventures of a Divorced Mother, Her Family, and Their Billing Superintendent. Oh, my goodness. You could just make shows where there's, like, you live in a building and there's a guy next door or something. We could just do that. Like, that's how things happened. That's crazy. What are we doing? What was television? It was so easy back then. There was no gimmicks and stuff. We just had people show up. Like the show called Alice, The Misadventures and Trials of an Aspiring Singer and Her Co-Workers at a Greasy Spoon Diner. You could just go to a diner, like, pick your freaking location. We could make it a show. We made one in a junkyard, okay? If you're not living in an apartment, you could just be, like, in a junkyard or at a diner or have, like, a superintendent in your building. What's this one? Chico and the Man, the relationship between a cranky old mechanic and a 20-something Chicano. I'm like, okay, how is this gonna go? It's probably not gonna hold up well if we were to watch it again. I can't imagine it would. And this one ran for 88 episodes. Even if your TV show sucked back in the day, you got to like 100 episodes. You'd have to be, I don't know, maybe not bad, but there had to be like a very specific reason you didn't get to 100. What the hell is soap? The soap opera antics of two families, the Campbells and the Tates, who I'm not even going to bother explaining that one. Billy Crystal was in it, if you're interested. Katherine Hellman, she led it. So that's fun, you know. These all sound terrible. What the hell's Rhonda? Is this just like a ripoff of Mary Tyler Moore? Oh, this is the spinoff of the Mary Tyler Moore show. Sorry, I was like, oh yeah, Rhonda. I was like, oh, we just like do it? Yeah. Rhoda, sorry. Oh my god. I'm gonna get roasted by all the Rhoda fans out here. See, this is what happens when you like look at a small poster for something you're vaguely aware of. The spinoff got 109 episodes. Are you kidding me? Like, she just, what, she goes on a different adventure? Yeah, she leaves her best pal and her other friends to try her luck in Manhattan. My goodness, do you remember when like a spinoff would just be going to like a different place? Like Joey, do you remember Joey's like, what if I actually became a good actor and like left New York? Wow. Wow. Julie Kavner was in this one. See, like, this is also the era where we see guys like James Burrows and James L. Brooks coming up and creating all this stuff. And then all like their friends go on to do The Simpsons, like Julie Kavner and Marcia Wallace and all that stuff. And those are the people I'm familiar with. And it's just like, hey, look at all these people. Cool. Man. I love Julie Kavner. I don't talk about it enough. I love her. I wish she got to do more instead of just being trapped in The Simpsons. Maybe she doesn't want to do more. But it's kind of cool. Back in the day, she starred in a show like this. And the last one on this list, to round it out with a show that you know the name of, even if you've never seen it a day in your life, The Odd Couple. What if there was two guys that were different? One's a neat freak and one's a slob. What if they were different? Like, yeah, what if that happened? What would that look like? Well, it would get 114 episodes and multiple attempts of rebooting it. Because it's a classic concept. Imagine if we made it today. This guy's a gamer bro. This guy is a jock or something. This guy only drinks, you know, I don't know, like prime energy drinks or whatever. And this guy is like, you know, he's cool and like gets chicks and stuff. What if there was like a slob and a clean guy? That could work in any era. It's timeless. It's timeless. Let's reboot it right now, you know? God, what is television? Television was crazy back then because you could go for like 10 years, you could just be on the air and it would just be the same form of like, your best friend is having issues with this date. You're going to try to help them up by going to this location. Antics ensue and you end up in the kitchen and there's like a fire or they like cook you into the cake or something. And suddenly you say like a clever one-liner and the guest star of the week, Donny Osmond or whoever, shows up and is like, hey, this is a weird time. And then boom, you make $1 million in your entire life because nobody paid you back then to do anything. And it's like, this is television. This is what television was. Just the worst thing ever, but somehow the most important and impactful events, like everything I love about The Simpsons, comes from this era, man. And I love The Simpsons, but all that just comes from these shows, like All in the Family and The Mary Tyler Moore Show and The Brady Bunch and Three's Company and all of this. It all just breathes to what The Simpsons becomes. So I guess I owe all of these for just being around and existing so I could get stuff I like happening in the 90s and stuff or whatever. But man, okay, let's pick five shows that I would say watch right now. If I had to give you five of them to watch, I would say MASH, which I believe you've probably already seen. I would say The Mary Tyler Moore Show. I would say The Jeffersons. I would say WKRP in Cincinnati. I would say The Bob Newhart Show. I think those would be my five. I'm going to completely ignore the Happy Days stuff. But if I had to throw one in there, I think Laverne and Shirley is a little bit more interesting than the other stuff. Okay. And you know what? If you like Challengers, maybe watch Three's Company. I don't know. Maybe it's relatable. Okay. In a year, we'll do the 60s and we'll talk about, I don't know, Star Trek. What else would happen in the 60s? Not much. The sitcoms, man. I don't know. Just watch MASH. It's like the only show you ever need to watch ever, probably. Because it runs forever. You get new characters all the time. And there's always something going on in it. So maybe that's the only one you should ever watch. But if not, hey, there you go. A bunch of shows for you to check out that you're never going to watch. Even if you want to watch them. Like, if you're, like, 20 years old and you're like, I want to see some classic television, are you going to watch 200 episodes of a show? I don't think so. Like, there's certain ones I think you could. Like, I've watched all of Cheers, like, before and Frasier, but that's when, like, we made the formula different. This is before that. And the formula is very annoying and very pandering and gross and stupid. I don't know. James L. Brooks starts here and he gets us The Simpsons, and he's making a new movie, so he's still out there being active. And a lot of these folks are actually still out there being active. Surprisingly, it was only 50 years ago some of these premiered. Some of these people are still young, like in their 60s. Okay, let's stop there. Sitcoms, they're good. And thank you all for watching this episode of The Geek Wave. Be sure to like and subscribe to the channel. As always, you can check me out on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And of course, I will catch you in the next one. Have fun. Stay safe. Good luck.